40 years ago today, Dr. Luther Terry issued the landmark Surgeon General's Report on Smoking and Health. The federal government's first ever pronouncement on the link between smoking and cancer was bolstered by several thousand scientific papers. Still, the report was challenged by tobacco companies, farmers, and smokers themselves. But few now question the link between smoking and disease, and smoking rates have been cut nearly in half. The once powerful tobacco industry has also been humbled by the 1998 Master Settlement Agreement. As part of the settlement, tobacco companies agreed to pay more than $200 billion to 46 states over the next 25 years. Tobacco opponents hoped that money would mainly be used to promote anti-smoking campaigns. That hasn't always been the case. Joining us to discuss tobacco issues on this 40th anniversary of the Surgeon General's report is Dr. Stephen Schroeder. He's chairman of the American Legacy Foundation. The foundation, whose mission is to promote tobacco control, is funded by the settlement. Good morning.
Good morning, Leah.
In 1964, more than half of all American men were smokers, and about a third of American women. And now we're at the point where fewer than a quarter of Americans smoke. Now, this is a habit that a lot of people compare to heroin. It's as addictive as heroin. So it seems like significant progress has been made, has it?
Well, it's a glass half full, glass half empty issue. There are a lot fewer smokers today than there were 40 years ago, and the numbers are creeping down. But smoking still kills 430,000 people every year. That's an astonishing number. Worldwide, it's almost 5 million every single year.
Now, in a paper that's been released today by the New England Journal of Medicine, you actually quote several anti-tobacco activists as saying that the $206 billion settlement was not a defeat for the industry, but rather a victory. Do you share that view?
Well, I think it's a mix. Certainly the industry had to pay a lot of money, but they were able to recoup the dollars by raising the prices of cigarette packages. And they were guaranteed that they wouldn't be sued by the states, which was a major concern for them and for the stock market.
Now, how is the money being spent or misspent?
Well, it was hoped that a lot of it would be spent on tobacco control. That hasn't happened. Even when the economy was flush, only a handful of states met the CDC guidelines that 5% of those monies would be spent on anti-tobacco work. Since the state budget crisis in the last couple of years, essentially all that spending has dried up, and it's being used for roads and hospitals and prisons and these sorts of things.
There's been an idea that perhaps taxing cigarettes at even higher rates might be a way to discourage smoking, and yet Canada has a higher cigarette tax than the federal and state governments here, and the rate of smoking in Canada is 22%, which is just slightly less than ours. Do you think raising taxes really makes a difference?
We do know that the more a pack of cigarettes cost, the more likely smokers are to consider quitting, and the less likely people who haven't smoked are to start smoking.
You actually call the federal efforts to try and control tobacco relatively weak, I think are your words. But isn't the decision to quit smoking is really a personal choice. So what kind of government involvement are you talking about?
Well, first of all, let's make it clear that for those who have an addiction to nicotine, it is devilishly hard to quit smoking. It is really hard. And most people who quit have to do it after five or six unsuccessful tries. What the government can do is raise the price of cigarettes through taxes. It can try to promote clean indoor air so that people who don't smoke aren't exposed to it. It can do counter-marketing to let people know about the warnings and the dangers of smoking. And finally, it can make it easier for smokers to get access to adequate treatment, including these wonderful toll-free quit lines.
What about the idea of, there are patches and there is gum that people using, and they're really expensive. I mean, one of those packs of Nicorette can run upwards of $30, $40.
They can be very expensive. If you're a heavy smoker, you might find that it's kind of a wash in terms of dollars. But people find that if those medications are covered, their chances of quitting are increased.
So that Medicare should cover, a prescription Nicorette?
private insurance companies ought to do it, and some do. State Medicaid varies, and some states, state of California covers these drugs, but most others don't. Medicare does not, and there are a lot of smokers over age 65.
You think we're better off than we were 40 years ago when the Surgeon General's report was first issued?
Oh, no question. We are much better off. But the industry has gotten more clever, and there are certain groups, for example, the young adults, 18 through 24, whose smoking rates are actually going up. And it's astonishing that the rate of smoking on college campuses is higher than the general rate in the adult population, and these are supposed to be our best and our brightest.
Dr. Stephen Schroeder, his special report on smoking was released by the New England Journal of Medicine today. He joined us from the studios of KQED in San Francisco. Dr. Schroeder, thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.